Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our Vatican Weekend English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges, and I'll be with you over the next half hour, coming up on today's programme. The Mass is a living encounter, not a museum. We report on Pope Francis's general audience, where he continues his reflections on the Eucharist, saying we should not pray like parrots, but open our hearts for a living encounter with the Lord. World Day of the Poor. What was behind the Pope's desire to set up the Church's first World Day to fight poverty? And how deeds, rather than words, are the key to this mission. Vatican's No to Nukes. We talked to one of the participants at the recent Vatican Symposium on Disarmament and Development about this hot-button issue. And A Blessing for Detroit. The Archbishop of this U.S. city speaks to us about the importance of Saturday's beatification of the Capuchin priest Father Solanus Casey, only the second American-born man to be proclaimed a blessed. Our broadcast with a report on Pope Francis's Wednesday general audience, where he continued his reflections on the Eucharist, saying the Holy Mass is a prayer par excellence that should be approached in silence and with a sense of wonder. He urged his listeners not to chatter before the Eucharist or pray like parrots, but open their hearts for a living encounter with Jesus. Chris Wells reports.
Pope Francis said the Mass is prayer. Or rather, it is the prayer par excellence, the highest, the most sublime, and at the same time, the most concrete. It is an encounter with the Lord.
Che cosa è veramente la preghiera?
But what is prayer, really, the Pope asked. It is, first of all, a dialogue, a relationship with God. Man, he continued, was created as a being in personal relationship with God, who finds his full realization only in the encounter with his Creator. God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit is himself a perfect relationship of love that is unity. Because we are created in the image and likeness of God, we too are called to enter into a perfect relationship of love. And it is the Mass, the Eucharist, that is the privileged moment to be with Christ, and through him, with God and with our brothers. But dialogue also means knowing how to remain silent in the presence of the other. Holy Father emphasized the importance of moments of silence when we go to Mass. The liturgy, he said, is not a time for chatting, but a time to recollect ourselves, to prepare our hearts for the encounter with Jesus. Jesus himself often went off to a place apart in order to pray, and his disciples, seeing his intimate relationship with the Father, asked him how to pray.
Gesù risponde che la prima cosa necessaria per pregare è saper dire Padre.
Jesus says the first thing necessary for prayer is to be able to call God Father. Pope Francis said, if I cannot say Father to God, I can't pray. We have to learn to say Father, that is, to put ourselves into his presence with filial confidence. In this sense, he continued, we must be like children, able to entrust ourselves entirely to God, as children do with their parents. And like children, we must also have a sense of wonder. We must allow ourselves to be surprised. Pope Francis recalled the gospel account of Nicodemus meeting with Jesus. In that encounter, Jesus spoke about the need to be born again. But how is this possible? The Pope asked. This is a fundamental question of our faith, he said, and this is the desire of every true believer, the desire to be reborn, the joy of beginning anew. Pope Francis asked his audience, do we have this desire? Does each one of us have the desire to always be reborn in order to encounter the Lord? Do you have this desire?
In verità, il Signore ci sorprende mostrandoci che Egli ci ama anche nelle nostre debolezze.
In fact, Pope Francis concluded, the Lord surprises us by showing us that he loves us even in our weakness. In the Mass, in our encounter with Jesus, the Lord encounters our fragility in order to bring us back to our first calling, that of being made in the image and likeness of God. This, Pope Francis said, is the environment of the Eucharist. This is the prayer. I'm Christopher Wells. We are the ones who make a brighter day, so let's start giving.
There's a choice we're making. Sunday, November the 19th, marks the Church's first ever World Day of the Poor, which was called for by Pope Francis at the conclusion of the Jubilee Year of Mercy. Here in the Vatican, the Pope will celebrate a Mass before some 4,000 poor and needy people and volunteers from a number of European countries. Following the Eucharist, a third of the visitors will be invited to lunch in the Paul VI Audience Hall, while the other guests will be taken to lunch in some of the Catholic colleges, seminaries and charitable organisations in the vicinity of the Vatican. But what was behind the Pope's decision, and what is it seeking to achieve? To find out more, Lydia Kane spoke to Monsignor Gino Silva, an official at the Pontifical Council for Promoting New Evangelization. He told her the World Day of the Poor is about helping to change our attitudes towards poverty.
Well, the first World Day of the Poor, it's one of the perpetual fruits of the Jubilee of Mercy. In fact, the Holy Father announced this initiative, this occasion, this opportunity for grace during the Jubilee, when he reached out to those who were socially marginalized. And so this is an opportunity for the Church around the world to not only celebrate and assist and be with those who are poor, but also to change our attitudes about poverty so that we can all recognize that a few things. Number one, that we're all poor in some way, and that every person is poor in some way, and everybody's got something to give, something to offer. And I think this is so in line with the Holy Father's pastoral approach to everything. It's for Pope Francis, it's that love opens one up to faith, and then faith sustains love. It's that dialectic. And here on the World Day of the Poor, we recognize as a Church that we are called as Christians to assist other people, not because we might be friends with them, not because we have a special relationship with them, but solely because that person has a need, and I can fill that need. And when we recognize this, this responsibility that we have, this opportunity that we have, we then can begin to encounter people as brothers and sisters. And so this World Day of the Poor, it's so beautiful because it's nothing about power, it's nothing about anything else but reciprocity, giving and receiving. And that's why the Holy Father's choice for the logo, I just think, is so powerful. The two people with hands outstretched in an open door, you don't know who's the one giving, who's the one receiving. It's kind of like leaves it ambiguous, which is for a reason. And the whole idea of being the one inside has to go outside to encounter the other person. And the one outside has to be willing to be brought in.
So basically, I mean, it's rethinking, it's looking within ourselves to see how we can help the poor in our daily lives.
Right, and it's not solely about just assisting in that moment, but it's about opening our minds and our hearts to our attitudes towards the poverty every day of the year. And that as Catholics, we need to do all that we can do to get upset about poverty, to try to bring people out of the poverty, but also to recognize that in poverty, when we recognize our own poverty, that we open ourselves to God's mercy. And so the poor have much to teach us. They have much to inspire us about in the journey of faith. But again, as the Church goes about its work of pastoral conversion and expressions of mercy, this day is such an important occasion for both.
You mentioned earlier about kind of different forms of poverty, because many people think of someone who maybe has no place to live, who hasn't enough food, and that is absolutely true. But there can also be things like spiritual poverty, different kinds of poverty. Is that what you meant?
Sure. And there are. And there's emotional poverties. There's intellectual poverties, you know, people that haven't been given the gift of education. And as you said, there's emotional poverties, spiritual poverties. And so, but yet, each one of us in our own lives, and I think this is, I think when we recognize the poverty within ourselves, that we recognize it's only God at the end of the day that can give us that purpose and that meaning in life. But here, as John Newman said, in, you know, cor ad cor loquitur, you know, heart speaks to heart. So this is such an occasion. Now, the logo is hand in hand, but you could take that as heart to heart as well. And what the Holy Father's doing here in Rome, having a sit-down, celebratory, festive meal. He'll be eating with 1,500 people in the Paul VI Hall, and then there'll be 1,500 other people, other poor, who will be fed in other locations around St. Peter's. It's an opportunity to not only be in the Basilica and celebrate Holy Mass and break Eucharistic bread together, but also to sit together afterwards at a feast, at a table, another kind of a feast, and to get to know one another, to encounter each other over a wonderful bowl of pasta and a beautiful meat dish and tiramisu, and that opportunity to engage and encounter, which is so important.
We are living in an era due to many conflicts in the world, due to natural disasters. You see people who are displaced, who have nowhere to go, who are poor, and you see it around the world. You need to look on the television and the newspapers, and I'm sure again Pope Francis is seeing that around the world as well, and on his visits.
Exactly, and he continues to focus the church, its attention towards how is it that we respond to poverty institutionally, but also the people individually, and in any small way that we can do that. Is just such a grace for people. Again, this is the first World Day of the Poor, so what the Holy Father is doing here and what this Pontifical Council, Archbishop Fisichella, has set up here, the hope is that it'll be modeled more and more around the world. So even having the medical doctors here that all week long, whether it's cardiologists or different specialists, we have infectious disease doctors. I mean, these are important initiatives for people that we're hoping down the road these can be done also in other parts of the world.
We should probably point out that we have all these events happening in Rome, but this is an event for the world church, isn't it?
Right. And it's interesting. We're starting to get a lot of replies from different dioceses around the world saying, this is what we're doing for the World Day of the Poor. Because again, it's not only about Sunday the 19th, it's about the week before. So how do we prepare our people in the parishes and the schools? So this office has done a pastoral aid, and it's in 7 languages, and it's on our website for free, that pastors and teachers can download. Parents, Lectio Divina, Saints of Charity, prayer services. So trying to give as many instruments to assist people around the world in living fully this opportunity of grace. And again, it falls so perfectly as an extension, as a fruit of the Jubilee of Mercy. But what better way to prepare ourselves for the celebration of Christ the King the following Sunday? Because wasn't Jesus Christ all about being with those who were marginalized, those who went without, those who were excluded? So I think it prepares us to welcome him so fully.
Just finally, you were talking about 1,500 people in the Paul VI Hall with Pope Francis. Any other events that people can maybe partake in?
So on Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at the Church of San Lorenzo Fuori la Mora, there's going to be a prayer vigil presided by Archbishop Fisichella for all the people, all the women and men who volunteer around the world in service to the poor. And it's very, of course, it's fitting that it was chosen St. Lawrence, because again, he was the deacon who went to the emperor and said, the treasures of the church are its poor. And he died for that. And so to have the prayer vigil there, so everybody's welcome. There's no tickets necessary for that. Again, we talked about the doctors in the Piazza Pia Dodicesimo, and then here in the morning. Sunday morning will be Mass, as well as then the lunches around the city of Rome.
That was Monsignor Gino Silva, an official at the Pontifical Council for New Evangelization, speaking to Lydia Kane.
We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Let there be peace on earth.
A leading Catholic peace campaigner says she hopes that Pope Francis's condemnation of nuclear weapons can influence what she called the current serious and frightening exchange between the United States and North Korea. Co-president of Pax Christi International, Marie Dennis, who attended the recent International Symposium on Disarmament and Development held at the Vatican, said she believed the Pope's clear call for the abolition of nuclear weapons could cause even the most resistant politicians to listen. During his address to delegates at the symposium, Pope Francis said nuclear weapons exist to prop up a mentality of fear that affects not only the parties in conflict, but the entire human race. He condemned weapons of mass destruction, particularly nuclear weapons, saying they created nothing but a false sense of security. Marie Dennis spoke to Philippa Hitchin on the sidelines of this conference.
Our message fundamentally is a message of gratitude to the Vatican and to all those who have gathered this conference together. It is very important that the world understand the depth and seriousness of Pope Francis' commitment to nuclear abolition. We're very fortunate to have worked with the Vatican during the process of negotiating the ban treaty and saw the seriousness of their commitment to this effort. Both the humanitarian consequences are obviously at the foundation of concern, but also just the way in which expenditures on nuclear weapons, on maintaining them, on refurbishing them, on the projected expenditures, are robbing from the poor and will continue to do that, is extremely serious and very much on the mind of the Vatican. We just think this is a very, very important opportunity to encourage the local churches around the world, the bishops' conferences in every country, all of us who are part of the church, to speak out, to take much more seriously this moment. I think that the challenge of the ban treaty has been in some ways a political challenge where some who might be calling for nuclear disarmament had at first not supported the treaty because they felt somehow it was not going to be acceptable to the big powers or that it would in some way interfere with a non-proliferation treaty's implementation. What we have been saying is that this whole process that I think in many ways is affirmed by this conference has been an important process in itself, in which those people in the world, those countries in the world that are not either nuclear powers or under the nuclear umbrella, but whose lives will be devastated by a nuclear war, have had an opportunity to speak up, to say, not in our names, that we have to find a way to ban these weapons. I think it's also that Pope Francis noted in his speech the importance of the collaboration between civil society and governments and the church and academics and others who all put energy into this important treaty.
The Vatican has been, as you say, very much behind it, very much working on it. It was one of the first to sign and ratify it. Of course, there will be people who say, well, that's easy for you and other countries that don't have nuclear weapons. The real challenge is getting those countries that do have nuclear weapons to see this changing attitude.
Absolutely, that is the challenge. But I think that in the world that we live in now, our countries, our cultures, our societies are so tightly interconnected that it really is not possible for a country to remain outside of the family of nations on important issues forever. So just the political pressure, the insistence that our world will be better without nuclear weapons, that nuclear weapons do not provide the security that we are told they'll provide, we think is a very, very important message. And that, yes, it's true that it's easier for those without nuclear weapons to promote this treaty, but the point is that in a nuclear exchange, even a small exchange of nuclear weapons, certainly in any kind of a major nuclear war, we could destroy the planet that we live on. So this is not a moment when we can separate those who don't have weapons from those who do. All of us will pay the price.
There's also testimony at this conference, isn't there, from survivors or organizations that represent those who were the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's a very important part of the picture, isn't it?
Of course it is. The presence of the Hibakusha now for how many years, 7 decades, in calling the world to get rid of these terribly destructive weapons has been extremely important, and it continues to be important. In many ways, it's very touching at this conference because so many of the survivors are getting older and older, and we won't have their firsthand testimony forever. So it is a gift that they're here. Pope Francis has recognized them with great care, and it is very important that they're part of this conference.
This meeting is taking place, of course, as the U.S. president is touring Asia discussing North Korea, one of the most sensitive areas at the moment as regards this rhetoric of war and nuclear possibilities. Do you think there's any chance of the message of this conference being heard in the places where it matters, the political decision-making halls of power?
I certainly hope so. I do think that Pope Francis' voice, the authority and influence that he has in the world is tremendous. There are, for example, before the U.S. Congress right now, efforts to address the question of who has the authority to use U.S. nuclear weapons. And I think that certainly at a congressional or parliamentary level that this message will be heard very clearly, and we'll make sure that it does get back to key people. The situation between the United States and North Korea is such a serious and frightening exchange. As Pax Christi International, we have, with many others, spoken out very clearly for a diplomatic solution. We believe that a diplomatic solution is possible. We think the experience of the Iran deal negotiations was a wonderful example. We've also been saying over and over again that it is time for humanity to move from a constant reliance on military action to nonviolent ways of dealing with even very dangerous situations. We believe that North Korea, the leadership of North Korea, has given ample indication that they would participate seriously if the United States will listen to what they've been asking for. Guarantee that the U.S. will not attack North Korea, a respect in the family of nations. It's a very difficult, very delicate situation, but once again, nuclear weapons cannot be used in that situation, in spite of the fact that, for example, the United States could clearly overwhelm North Korea, but to even threaten to obliterate the North Korean people, to so seriously affect the people in South Korea and in the whole region, we think is morally unacceptable. It's an unconscionable idea. So we have to turn to diplomacy. We have to move in the direction of a negotiated settlement. And in order to do that, we need to listen very carefully to the concerns and the demands on each side. We think it can happen. And we do think that even the most resistant politicians hopefully will listen, because the Vatican is speaking so clearly for the abolition of nuclear weapons.
And that was Marie Dennis, co-president of Pax Christi International, speaking to Philippa Hitchin.
And let it begin with me.
This weekend saw the beatification of the Capuchin priest Father Solanus Casey, who's only the second US-born man to be proclaimed a blessed, The Beatification Mass was taking place in Detroit on November the 18th. Father Solanas was born in Wisconsin and joined the Capuchin Franciscans in Detroit in 1898 and quickly became known for his closeness and sympathy towards all those who were sick or poor or needy. It was not long before reports of miraculous favours attributed to his prayers began to spread throughout the region. To find out more about the personality of Father Solanas and the importance of this beatification, I spoke earlier to the Archbishop of Detroit, Alan Vigneron.
Our community is so grateful to the Holy Father for having confirmed our own sense of the holiness of Father Solanas. He's a most beloved figure here in our community. Many people have memories of his goodness, the marvels that occurred as a result of his prayer, and we're filled with gratitude and joy about this. It's a great occasion, not only for the Catholics, but for the whole community here in our part of the world.
Can you describe for us more about his personality, bring him to life for us in a way, and tell me what was so especially praiseworthy about his life and his good deeds?
Father was a very humble man, greatly devoted to his vocation as a Capuchin. He came to the seminary quite late in life, didn't have a very good secondary education, and so barely got through his studies, and the superiors said that he really hadn't mastered theology sufficiently to hear confessions or preach doctrinal sermons. And so his whole life was spent as the porter at the communities where he was assigned. And he connected to people very powerfully because he brought a spirit of Christian love. Actually, I see Father Solanas' beatification as a confirmation of the Year of Mercy that we celebrated last year. He connected to people very powerfully, and he brought them to a serene confidence in God's providence and care.
And how far did his fame spread? Because it quickly did, didn't it? Far beyond Detroit.
Yes, I think especially because of the love the Capuchin fathers have for him, they were able to make him known in many other parts of the world. For example, the woman who received the miracle is a parishioner at one of the Capuchin parishes in Panama.
I was just about to ask you about the miracle. Can you fill us in a little bit about the details about this miracle?
The woman who received this grace was here on a pilgrimage with other people from the friar's parish. And the friars love her. They say she's a wonderful parishioner, cares for all the people in the parish. And so she had a list of people for whom she was praying to Father at his tomb, and she felt an interior inspiration that said to her, "And what for yourself?" And so she's had this very troublesome skin disease, which is typically incurable. And so she asked that through Father's intercession, she be relieved of that. And the cure was instantaneous. The scales began to fall away immediately. And she walked into the friar's refectory, and they saw this happening.
Finally, what for you is the real significance of his beatification, and what message is it sending to the faithful?
Two messages. One, that God uses each of us in our own little way to be evangelists of his love and mercy, and that holiness is possible for all of us. It's everyone's vocation. That's what I'd like people to think about as we celebrate the beatification, to imitate Father.
I was speaking there to the Archbishop of Detroit, Alan Vigneron. And that's all we have time for on today's programme. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.